Chapter 18. Septumculus. Stavius was ready to leave shortly after breakfast and waited outside while Larsa double-checked her cart full of paintings and locked up the house. Janice, however, was taking forever to get ready. Stavius and Larsa felt as if they had been standing by the cart for an eternity when the front door finally opened and a beautiful teenage girl stepped out. She was wearing a floral skirt with a white blouse and appeared to be about 15 or 16 years old. Larsa smiled as she approached and said, "Stavius, I'd like to introduce you to my daughter, Jenna."
"Wow, I didn't know you had a daughter," said Stavius in surprise. "She was beautiful," and he stood up a little straighter and brushed the dust off his shirt.
Jenna said, "Why, Stavius, you aren't going to flirt with me, are you?" in a sweet, high-pitched voice with a familiar, sarcastic overtone.
"Janice!" exclaimed Stavius. "I can't believe that's you!"
Jenna laughed and said, "Yeah, I clean up pretty good, don't I?" She performed a little twirl, causing her skirt to fly up slightly.
"Yes, but you know that your illusions won't work on the guards," said Stavius. He was still amazed that this was Janice. It was one thing to illude yourself to look and sound like a girl, but Janice was managing to move and act like one. Stavius knew he would just look like a guy in drag if he tried it.
"Yeah, I know," replied Janice, and with a sweep of his hand, the illusion of this beautiful 16-year-old girl disappeared. In her place was a rather average-looking 13-year-old girl in a plain cotton blouse and skirt. Her features were similar to Janice, but she still looked like a girl.
"What the?" stuttered Stavius.
Jenna laughed and said, "It's amazing how you can use a little bit of magic to transform art supplies into makeup. You just have to know how to use it to achieve the desired effect."
But... "You still look like a girl," exclaimed Stavius. "How did you know how to do that?"
"Kids, we really don't have time for this," interrupted Larsa. "Janice, you should elude yourself, and you both should get into character. We need to get going to beat the crowd. It will be far easier to get past the guards when they are fresh than when they are grumpy after processing hordes of impatient tourists trying to get home." With that, they left Clothton and followed the road through the cotton fields. It was late September, and most of the cotton had been picked. The area looked as though it was filled with nothing but scrubby plants with occasional cotton balls scattered about. The three of them walked together for most of the short journey, but Stavius dropped back as they approached the guard station and let a family riding on a wagon pulled by a centaur get in front of him. He saw Larsa and Jenna approach the gate, and as they did, Jenna's illusion faded and disappeared. The guards had a quick chat with Larsa, and they were on their way moments later. The family in the wagon, however, were having some sort of issues. The guards were arguing with them about something they had purchased in Clothton and wanted to bring into the city. Stavius wasn't sure what was causing the problem, but it appeared that this was going to take some time. The guards must have realized the same thing, so they pulled the family off to the side and waved at Stavius to approach. Stavius knew he fit the profile of the suspect, so he wasn't surprised that he was interrogated more extensively than Larsa and Jenna. He explained that his name was Staven, that he was living in Clothton, and that he had moved there a few months back. Staven somewhat surprised the guards when he answered that he wasn't going to the execution, but he was, instead, heading to a town in the east to visit his previous home. Another guard had joined the two who were interviewing Stavius. It was apparent that they were not entirely buying his story, but Stavius felt as though he was winning them over when the unthinkable happened. A low, angry voice bellowed, "Do not let that man pass!" Instantly, the three guards surrounded Stavius and pointed their swords towards him. A moment later, two of them were pushed to the side by the giant, angry centaur who had been pulling the wagon. "Staven, you smelly newt!" he shouted. "I can't believe I finally found you. Prepare to learn the consequences of bailing on a deal."
"Randy!" said Stavius with a nervous chuckle. "How have you been, old buddy?"
"Wait," said one of the guards to the centaur. "You know this man?"
"Know him?" growled Randy. "This man owes me money. I've been trying to hunt him down ever since he lopped off the head of that chicken."
The guards then turned towards Stavius, and their leader asked, "Are you really the idiot who chopped off the head of a chicken and let it run around destroying half of the eastern fields?"
"Hey, it wasn't half of the fields, and it was an accident," said Stavius. "And for that matter, you try to catch a headless chicken running randomly at top speed. I tell you that it just isn't possible."
By now, the guards were elbowing each other and laughing. The other travelers in line were staring, and Stavius was feeling more anger and embarrassment than fear. The lead guard, who was most in control, managed to say, "So you ran away to Clothton. What have you been doing over there?"
"Picking cotton,"
mumbled Stavius. At this point, all the guards, even the captain, roared with laughter. Stavius knew at that moment that he had been moved from their most wanted list to their biggest loser list. He was glad that neither Larsa nor Janice were seeing this.
"But you're missing the point," roared Randy. "He owes me money."
"I'm sorry," said a guard between guffaws. "You can't pass until you've settled your debt to this gentleman."
"Randy is no gentleman," said Stavius. "And besides, I don't have that much money."
"Then you'll pay in blood," swore Randy.
"But I'll give you everything I have if you call us even," finished Stavius.
He removed a worn pouch from his belt and tossed the entire bag to Randy. It contained a little more than half of what he owed the centaur, but Randy considered the offer and decided that it was better than nothing.
"Deal," grumbled Randy. "You'll never be able to pay off the rest working as a cotton picker anyway. Just don't ever let me see your ugly face again."
Then he turned back to the family in the wagon, who were finally cleared and had been shouting at him to hitch up and take them home. Stavius turned back to the guards, but they had already forgotten about him and were checking the next travelers. He began walking across the bridge, feeling thankful for making it past security and for Randy being too stupid to search him for another money pouch. Satish had given him a sizable amount of cash to cover their stay in Septumculus, and Stavius did not want to share any of it with that centaur bully. The Septumculus River was broad, and the bridge was long and impressive. Stavius couldn't begin to fathom the amount of magic required to build or maintain it. He paused at the midpoint, as most people did, to gaze at the river and the city on the other side. There were 5 massive castles situated atop 5 mighty hills arcing from the north to the east. 2 more castles were located across a smaller river known as the Western Fork, with one at the northwestern tip of the arc formed by the first 5. The other was far to the southwest and appeared to be much less pretentious and more fortified than the rest. He shook his head as if to clear it from Janice's conversation from last night and looked at the city again. The bridge ended in a small marketplace formed by crossroads at the base of the ridge. The road crossing the bridge continued northward between the 2 steep hills, while the other curved along the bottom of the ridge. Each castle seemed to have its own road winding north off of this riverbank highway up the valleys between their hills. The riverbank highway continued over a small bridge, crossing the Western Fork to connect with the remaining 2 castles. Both Mark and Staven had grown up on the east side of the city, and neither were sure where Price Hill and Fairmont were, but Stavius fully expected Janice to insist that his hypothesis was correct. He sighed and continued his walk. Larsa and Jenna were waiting for him at the far side of the bridge, and as Stavius had predicted, Janice's first words were, "Did you see them?" He was thinking, "Did you see Price Hill and Fairmont?" But only Stavius could hear those thoughts. The 2 boys had picked up the ability to telepathically communicate while staying in Equus, and had been practicing ever since. They still couldn't communicate with anyone else telepathically, but it worked pretty well between themselves. "Who did you see?" asked Larsa.
The family in the cart," Stavius quickly answered. "We had been talking about what you could and couldn't bring into Septumculus at dinner last night and saw them being harassed. It isn't important."
Larsa nodded and said, "Well, you should be thinking more about where you're going to stay than what you can sneak into the city. Do you have lodging reservations anywhere?" Of course, neither of the boys had any sort of reservations, and their perplexed expressions confirmed Larsa's hunch. "Well, you'll have a difficult time finding any rooms now, so close to Lunafest. I think the entire region has descended upon the city to participate this year. You should come with me. I'm staying at the Traveler's Den and have some pull there. Perhaps they can find you a room." While Janice appreciated all of Larsa's help thus far, he was starting to feel uncomfortable relying on her. "I don't know if we can trust her," he thought to Stavius. "We barely know anything about her." "Yeah, but she's right that we do need a place to stay," thought Stavius. Out loud he said, "Thank you, Larsa. I'm not sure we'll take you up on it, but we'll certainly help you get your cart there." "Thank you," answered Larsa. "I could use the assistance. The den is near the top of the hill, and this cart is getting heavy. By the way, you'll really like it there. It is often used by the Sodality of Travelers."
"What's the Sodality of Travelers?" asked Janice.
"Oh, come on, guys," groaned Larsa. "It's the Fellowship of Travelers between the 2 Earths. You didn't think that you 5 are the only travelers, did you?"
"2 Earths?" Janice innocently asked.
"I don't know what you're talking about. We're travelers, but only from a farm on the southeastern edge."
"Whatever," sighed Larsa. "I applaud you for sticking with your story, but you have to figure out who to trust. Let's go."
Larsa grabbed one handle of the cart while Stavius grabbed the other, and the 3 of them began the long climb up the valley road.
There were hills on either side of them, but the one on their left was nearly a cliff. Houses and shops which didn't make it into the crossroads market lined the right-hand side of the road. The Traveler's Den was an unremarkable establishment near the top of the hill. It was built in a little notch in the cliff on the left-hand side of the road, and its entrance was blocked by a high, wrought-iron gate with no sign. Larsa pushed the gate open and motioned for them to follow. A large stone Gothic building appeared as they passed the gate. It had clearly been carefully eluded, and Stavius immediately dialed down his illusion vision to avoid future surprises. "Welcome to the Traveler's Den," laughed Larsa with a bow. "As you can see, they don't cater to the general public." Janus was cheering up as they approached. "You know, this could be perfect," he thought to Stavius. "It's right in town, yet it's well hidden. This looks ideal." Yeah, thought Stavius, but something was bothering him. He had to agree that it seemed perfect, and with every step, it looked better and better. He wanted to stay here, and was already envisioning having a nice hot bath and rest before beginning their search for the girls, but something was gnawing at the back of his mind. So he set down Larsa's cart and said, "Here you go, Larsa. We appreciate your offer, but I think we'll go look around for a while first." Both of them were immediately overwhelmed with a desire to stay. It was more than a wish. It felt like a need. And both Stavius and Janus immediately recognized the sensation. This emotion wasn't coming from them. It was emanating from inside the Traveler's Den, in much the same way as the feelings of awe and love radiated from the Unicorn Palace. Once they realized that these weren't their own feelings, they also sensed something else underneath. Somewhere deep below the feelings of desire were echoes of hunger. This realization was terrifying, but neither Janus nor Stavius would have been able to resist if a young boy hadn't burst through the gate at that moment shouting, "Did you hear? They caught them! They caught the other terrorists!" All their desire dissipated in an instant, and Janus actually stumbled from the sudden loss. Neither boy was able to speak, but Larsa wasn't at a loss for words. "What do you mean they caught them?" she cried. "They caught the fourth terrorist and his companion just a few minutes ago," repeated the messenger. Stavius had recovered his senses and asked, "Wait, were these the guys they were looking for at the bridge?" Larsa started to reply, but the excited messenger interrupted, saying, "Yeah, but they didn't come over the bridge. They crossed in a boat downstream and circled around to try to enter the city from the north. Those two almost made it, too. The constabulary caught them lurking around down by the festival grounds just over an hour ago." Larsa glared at all three of them. The warm, sweet artist lady who had graciously escorted the pair from Clothen was gone. For a fleeting moment, the woman standing in front of them revealed her true, ruthless nature. Larsa's cold and angry persona dissipated a second later, and she thanked the messenger before turning to Janus and Stavius to apologize that perhaps she had mistaken their identities. She handed Stavius a calling card and insisted that her offer to stay at the Traveler's Den was still valid, although neither boy believed her. Relief washed over her face when the boys remarked that they preferred to look elsewhere, and she wished them luck in finding rooms. Stavius and Janus rushed out of the gate and almost ran up the road. They didn't stop until the crossroads at the top of the hill, which was a busy intersection filled with a continuous stream of people and centaurs. The boys felt safe enough to sit on a bench and rest. "What was that?" asked Stavius. "Even though I knew I was being drawn in, I couldn't resist the temptation." "That was the home of a vampire," answered Janus. "In fact, I think his name is Borok. It's one of those places so well eluded that most people think it's just a myth to explain inexplicable disappearances." "Wait, you mean Borok was going to drink our blood?" exclaimed Stavius. "No, man, you are such a dork. You really don't know anything about magic, do you?" said Janus in disbelief. "Vampires drain you of your magical power and your soul. They feed off your magical energy and you become their slave once they've tasted you. After that, you mindlessly serve them, both physically and magically." "What do you mean by serving them magically?" asked Stavius, who wasn't sure he wanted to know. "I mean that you cannot help but do whatever they want, and that they continue to feed off your magical energy. You become part of the vampire's food supply. You go out and replenish your magical energy and return to them to be drained again and again," answered Janus with a shudder. "I never actually believed they were real until today." "Yeah, and we were almost two more entrees," said Stavius. "I don't know who they caught, but we need to rescue them too. They don't realize it, but they just saved our butts." "Agreed, but we still need a room, and Larsa was probably right," said Janus. "There probably aren't many available in town anymore." I think I might have a solution for that, but it's not much better than staying with vampires. In fact, it's pretty similar, sighed Stavius. In any event, I can't face it right now. How about we try to find the girls and start to figure out how we're going to rescue them?
Well, that should be easy, answered Janice.
He quickly added, I mean, it should be easy to find them. The seven families probably have them on display. I have no idea how we're going to rescue them, though. He then pointed to a sign indicating east at the crossroads, which read, Fairground and Zoo. The good news, he added, is that the best place to start is mostly downhill from here.
I hope you're right, muttered Stavius. This place is nothing but hills.
Janice was right. The road to the fairgrounds was a welcome downhill journey of only about a mile and a half. The sun was near its zenith and the street was relatively empty. The temperature was still unbearably hot, even though it was late September, and most civilized people had adopted the tradition of a midday siesta. This was fine with Stavius. He hated crowds and particularly despised the ostentatious displays that wealthy city dwellers insisted on showing. The fairgrounds were nearly deserted by the time the boys arrived, although it was clear from the preparations that they would be packed for the festival in 2 days. Craft and food booths had been hastily constructed, surrounded by expansive picnic and gaming areas. An enormous set of viewing stands had been erected near the zoo where, presumably, the executions would occur. This park was in a sort of bowl-shaped valley on the eastern edge of the city. Steep hills surrounded the eastern, northern, and western sides to create a natural amphitheater overlooking the river to the south. The fairgrounds were on the west side of the park, and the zoo was on the east. The zoo was known for its dragon exhibit, and its dominant feature was the dragon aviary. This expansive enclosure was nestled into the eastern hill with a magically fortified cage with nets rising 100 feet in the air to cover a 400-foot diameter area. Some of Stavius's few happy family memories involved visiting the zoo and watching the flock of dragons fly, fight, and play in the enclosure. There were dozens of small to mid-sized dragons and one colossal fire breather who lived in a cave in the eastern hill and rarely came out. Stavius had only ever seen the tip of its tail outside the cave, but dreamt about the majestic creature who always hid from public view. The southwestern side of the park was dominated by Admian Castle. The Admian family was the most powerful of the seven families and considered themselves the owners of the park and the surrounding area. Their castle was an enormous structure built atop one of the highest and steepest hills in the city, and the architecture of the palace was even more impressive than its size. The castle was designed to mimic the form of a tree, with its upper floors extending far over the relatively narrow trunk, which held the entrance and large public hall. The building design was structurally impossible without massive amounts of magical enhancement. In fact, that was part of the point. All seven families went to great lengths to show off how much magical power they had with excessive and pointless displays. It made Stavius angry every time he saw it. There were villages at the outskirts of the region where magical wells were running dry, and yet these seven obscenely wealthy families collected and hoarded power only to waste it on useless exhibitions. Some people believed the concentration of magical power in the city caused the magical drought at the edges of the region. The city leaders, however, dismissed this as nonsense and emphasized that the unique architecture of the seven castles was a key reason for the greatness of the city. Stavius decided to shake off these thoughts by asking Janice, "Any ideas of how to find our companions?" Janice was munching on an apple he had fished out of his backpack and answered with a rather full mouth,
"I don't know about you, dude, but I'd probably start by checking out that booth over there."
He waved his hand, holding the dripping, half-eaten apple towards a bright yellow stall with a large sign saying, "Event Tickets, Rotten Fruit, Talisman Tours."
"Rotten fruit?" asked Stavius.
"Man, you really don't get out much, do you?" laughed Janice as he shook his head and began walking towards the booth. "It's for throwing at the prisoners."
"Wait, you mean that we can actually see the prisoners?" asked Stavius. "I just assumed they'd be locked in some deep dungeon."
"Guess not," replied Janice as he tossed his apple core onto the ground. "Let's see what the man has to say." It turned out that the booth was unmanned during the lunchtime lull, but a poster indicated that the talisman tour left every day at 1 o'clock, visited the five talismans located on this side of the Western Fork, and provided insightful and little-known histories and information about these sacred relics. The tour seemed like an excellent opportunity to scout out where the talismans were located and the types of security they could expect to encounter. Stavius suggested that they split up, with Janice taking the tour and Stavius securing lodging. First, however, they needed to find the girls. Having finished his apple, Janice had been searching for an open food stall when he espied the girls, or at least a corner of their cage, peeking out from behind the viewing stands. He nudged Stavius, and the two of them trotted over to the grandstands. A 20-foot by 30-foot freestanding cage was situated between the viewing stands and the dragon aviary. It was on a platform raised about 2 feet off the ground, had a flat roof with open, barred sides, and one small enclosed structure, which was probably the latrine. Graffiti words like traitors, terrorists, and monsters were scrawled in large letters along the platform sides. Two girls were sitting in the far corner while a third paced back and forth along the side nearest the viewing stands. She turned and walked away as soon as she saw the boys. Stavius leaned over to Janice and whispered, "Hey, which one is which?" Janice chuckled and said, "For Sarah is the pretty one, Narayana is the angry one, and Elisa is the nice one. You'll see what I mean when you meet them. I can't wait to hear how you start this conversation, ma'am." Stavius glared at Janice and muttered, "You are such a tool." The boy had a point, though. He couldn't just walk up, introduce himself, and say he was here to rescue them. Not only would they think he was crazy, but there might be other people eavesdropping. He suddenly realized just how unprepared he was for this mission.
Guys, he croaked out as he walked up to the cage, "can we chat for a moment?"
The girls ignored him while Janice smirked.
"Really, it's kind of important."
Stavius tried again, slightly louder. The woman who was pacing grunted, "Go away, we're not interested," without even turning around. Janice was giggling now, and at risk of erupting into full-fledged laughter while shaking his head and repeating, "I told you so, man, I told you so." Stavius elbowed him, leaned into the bars of the cage, and said,
"My name's Stavius, and you already know my friend Janice. We were sent by a mutual acquaintance named Ertish."
The pacing girl stopped upon hearing this, and all three stared at the boys. One of the girls in the corner stood up and walked over to them. She knelt down on the other side of the bars and stared at them for several minutes before saying, "The only Janice I know is a boy. I've never met a girl with that name."
"No, it's me," Janice quickly replied. "I'm just in disguise."
Stavius had been so focused that he had forgotten that Janice was wearing a skirt and said, "The kid's a pretty good crossdresser, isn't he?" The girl turned towards Stavius and said, "And I suppose that you are the brave dragon hunter who is going to save us three damsels from our doom and whisk us off to safety." Stavius was completely dumbfounded. How did she know he was a dragon hunter?
Yes, I guess I am. Wow, you must be Versera. You are beautiful. How did you know I am a dragon hunter?"
"I don't know. Perhaps it is the stench emanating from you that smells like a dragon's armpit," she complained.
"She's right, you know," added Janice. "You really smell ripe."
"Hey, ease up. I haven't had time to do laundry," Stavius retorted. "Well, then perhaps this will help," said Versera, as she dumped a bowl of cold gruel she had been carrying behind her back over Stavius's head.
"Hey," yelled Stavius, "why did you do that?"
"Well, I'm hoping it covers your stink, that maybe it'll cool you off, you pervert. I'm all of 13 years old, and you're what, like 20?
"I'll have you know that my visitor is also 13, complained Stavius, "and how am I going to wash myself in my clothes so I can find a room?"
"Wash your clothes?" asked Rosera in disbelief as the other two girls came over to see what was happening.
"Dude, stand still," said Janice. "We have got to get you trained in magic."
Janice quickly waved his hand from Stavius' head to his feet, and as he did so, all the gruel, sweat, and dirt fell off of Stavius and his clothes into a sticky puddle of gunk below him. "Now, step out of that mess before it gets on your shoes," commanded Janice, who caused the smelly mass on the ground to transform into wildflowers as Stavius stepped aside. "Nice trick," said a new voice from above. Janice smiled and looked up to see who had spoken as a bedpan full of pee was dumped on his face. He sputtered and swore as he danced around and quickly altered the urine into rose water.
"Narayana, you jerk! I can't believe you did that," he exclaimed.
"Hey, I wasn't kidding," said Stavius. "That really is Janice. You know him. You trained with him."
"Yeah, I believe you," sighed Narayana. "But that was the best I could do with these bars in the way. He deserves so much more. By the way, you guys are going to draw some unwanted attention if anyone sees you hanging out chatting with us."
"As much as I hate to say it, Narayana, I agree with you," lamented Janice as he sat down. "Have a seat, Stavius." Stavius plopped on the ground next to Janice in confusion. How could 3 13-year-olds be so calm while sitting in a cage mere days before they were to be executed? And why were they sitting down after Janice agreed they should leave? Janus concentrated for a moment and then swirled his hand above his head. Two eluded versions of the boys rose up like ghosts out of their bodies when he finished and strolled off toward the dragon aviary. Nice trick, but how does that help? Asked Stavius.
Oh, they'll wander around for a while and swing back over when we're done. I've made us invisible, answered Janus.
Wait, you can make us disappear? Asked Stavius in amazement. He still felt so lost around magic.
No, not really, replied Janus. I just made us look like the signs on the platform.
The illusion should work as long as we don't move and no one gets too close. It'll give us a few minutes more time to chat. Stavius decided to accept that they were invisible, but he couldn't comprehend the prisoner's strange behavior.
What is with you? He asked the girls. Any normal person in your situation would be curled up in a fetal position, freaking out. I know that I would. How are you remaining so calm?
Oh, you mean lying on the ground, sobbing in utter fear and depression? Asked Narayana.
Been there, answered Versera. Done that, echoed Elisa as she sat down to converse. You see, all our hosts had complete mental breakdowns and are simply gone, as far as we can tell. The only ones in here, she continued, tapping her head, are our visitors. We're not too freaked because we'll just wake up from this nightmare and get a good night's sleep for a change.
Stavius stared at Janus, who quickly thought, we need to stop them, Stavius. What if they're wrong about their hosts?
I know, Stavius thought back.
Who are you?
Came a booming thought into both of the boys' minds. It was, of course, silent, but it felt like a deep roar so mighty their entire bodies seemed to vibrate.
What was that? Janus and Stavius exclaimed together. Quiet! Hissed Narayana.
You might be invisible, but you can still be heard. I was saying that I'm looking forward to being done with this world. We've all agreed that we aren't going to stick around to be eaten by dragons.
No, that wasn't what we were asking about, began Stavius. Janus interrupted him with,
but what do you mean, eaten by dragons?
And what do you mean that you aren't sticking around, added Stavius.
Don't you get it, you fools? Asked Narayana with exasperation. They plan to release us into the aviary at midday on Fives Day to be eaten by the dragons. It's the grand finale of Lunafest, and all of Septumculus's elite will be here with their children to watch and cheer. It's a once-in-a-lifetime event, which will be fun for the entire family, except that we aren't going to let them have their fun. We're all going to kill ourselves tomorrow night. My only regret is not being around to see the disappointment on their faces.
Wait, you can't kill yourselves, shouted the boys, despite the need to be quiet.
Shut up, you idiots, warned Narayana. Of course we can. We all agree that being strangled will be a less painful death than being torn apart by a pack of dragons. And even though our hosts will die, our visitors will wake up and finally stop having these horrible dreams.
Besides, added Versera, it will piss off the Admian family and the rest of them. They locked us up and plan to execute us for entertainment, even though we have done nothing. We might not be able to destroy them, but if the best we can do is ruin their plans, so be it.
No, please don't do that, insisted Stavius. He almost spilled the secret that visitors die when their hosts die, but realized that the girls would be useless if they knew.
We'll figure out a way to get you out of here. Just give us a chance.
Well, you have until tomorrow night, answered Narayana, but I, for one, would rather you spend your time trying to steal the talismans. Now that would be something which would really piss off the seven families.
We will, said Janus. Just please don't do anything rash. Then he jabbed Stavius and said, we need to get moving. People are starting to come back.
Their doppelgangers were carrying bags of rotten fruit illusions as they wandered back to where the boys were crouching. The two boys stood up into their illusions and, at Janus's suggestion, threw the eluded fruit at the girls. Imaginary tomatoes and overly ripe peaches splattered on the girls, and Janus joked, don't go anywhere, ladies, with a nasty laugh, and they turned to walk away as it began to rain. Lightning flashed in the distance, and thunder echoed up through the river valley.
Looks like a wonderful day for a talisman tour, Janus, thought Stavius.
They took two steps before the deep voice entered their heads again and yelled,
be careful, you are being watched.
I know we're being watched, cried Janus. We can hear you. Just please stop shouting.
Then, being careful to mask his thoughts, he whispered to Stavius, who or what do you think that is?
I'm guessing it's another vampire, answered Stavius. Every time it speaks, I also feel emotions like sadness, depression, and anger.
Yeah, I think you're right. We need to get out of here, answered Janus in a hushed tone before being interrupted by the disembodied voice.
My apologies, youngsters, came the voice. It has been a long time since I have had a conversation, and you were right that I have been watching you. However, I am referring to the woman standing to your right.
She followed you into the park, then wandered among the exhibits, but she is once again watching and following you. Stavius quickly glanced past Janice, who was walking to his right.
It's Larsa, he said. How did she find us? Asked Janice in a panic. I don't know, but we need to lose her, and we can't let her know that we came here just to talk to the girls, answered Stavius.
Then he noticed the second cage. There were two boys curled up into sobbing balls in a corner, and Stavius nudged Janice to walk towards them. They spent several minutes trying to talk to the boys, who appeared to be about 13 as well, but they were only able to invoke incoherent ramblings and cries for their mothers. These were apparently the boys who had been caught and accused of being the girls' accomplices. I guess we have to rescue them too, grumbled Janice. Yeah, but first we need to split up and lose Larsa. It's time for your tour. Let's get lost in this crowd, and then you can elude a different appearance and wander away with them. I'll hang out here until your tour has left, and then I'll shake Larsa before finding us some lodging. We can meet back here at dusk.
Yes, sir, said Janice with a fake salute.
Do you always have to take command?
No, but I didn't think we had time for a discussion, Stavius said. Do you have a better idea?
Nope, answered Janice. I was just making an observation. I'll meet you by the dragon cage at dusk. They joined the group of tourists, and Janice quickly transformed into a middle-aged man. A few minutes later, he had joined the afternoon tour group and was climbing on a horse-drawn cart heading out of the valley. Larsa looked slightly confused, but sat down on a bench a discreet distance away from Stavius as he rested near the far end of the dragon cage, near the sign describing Bruno the dragon's species, age, and breeding range. Stavius was searching for a distraction to avoid thinking about the disembodied voice in his head and his next task. Your friends are correct. You should focus on stealing the talismans rather than trying to rescue them. And you are still being watched, rumbled the deep voice. For some reason, she seems to have more of an interest in you than in your friend. They almost bumped into each other, but she didn't seem to notice. Stavius sighed. So you're still here, eh? Well, my friend is a lot better at eluding disguises than I am, thought Stavius. Now, who are you, and how do you know about the talismans? My name is unimportant. You would not recognize it anyway, answered the voice in Stavius's head. I have excellent hearing and have used it to listen to your conversation. I also have a desire to harm the seven families and know far more about the talismans than you. I can help you. Do you even know why you are trying to steal them?
Yes, of course, thought Stavius. We're fulfilling the prophecy.
And what will you do with those seven talismans once you've obtained them? Asked the voice.
I'm not sure, admitted Stavius. Have you ever read the full prophecy? Asked the voice.
Well, no, not really, thought Stavius.
So you're risking your life to steal seven precious and sacred artifacts to give to people you don't know, all because of a prophecy you've never actually seen? Asked the voice in a somewhat sarcastic tone. Stavius was becoming uncomfortable, suspecting that this was part of some sort of seductive trap. However, some of these questions had been teasing around the back of his mind for a while.
And despite your apparent age, do you know why they typically choose to send 13-year-olds on such a critical and dangerous mission? Asked the voice.
Because hosts and visitors can only join in their primes, replied Stavius, thankful that he finally knew an answer.
Stavius heard a loud snort, followed by the voice in his head saying, But if that were true, then why not send people who were 17 or 19 or 23? Surely they would be stronger and more skilled than you. And why only four or five of you? Why not an entire army?
Stavius was lost. He had wondered the same thing ever since he had heard of the prophecy. It just didn't make any sense, so he didn't reply.
You know the answer, the voice said after a few minutes. You just demonstrated it to me a moment ago.
Now Stavius was confused. He thought back to the past half hour and couldn't think of anything that stood out. He did take charge and give instructions to Janice and the girls, but did he really do it better than an older boy?
The voice explained, 13 is the prime age where you have enough skills and independence to do the job while still believing everything an adult tells you. Anyone older would ask these questions and more. Older hosts would also be disinclined to suddenly quit their jobs, abandon their families, and shirk their responsibilities for a year. Your hosts might miss their parents, but you're too young to have the kinds of responsibilities that cannot be abandoned.
So, you're saying we're recruited because we're suckers, moaned Stavius.
I am unfamiliar with the term, but judging from your emotions, I would say yes, answered the voice.
And why do you care? Asked Stavius suspiciously. He didn't like the voice's answer, but it kind of made sense. Why do you want us to steal the talismans? Because those talismans are destroying this region, came the reply with an intense blast of anger. But there's more, pushed Stavius. You don't just care about the environment. Yes, I do care about our home, but you're right. It's also to hurt those families. My ancestors transformed this whole region from a magic wasteland into a verdant paradise. Then these greedy families migrated here and abused the powers they discovered for their own personal gain, roared the voice with pure hatred. But there's more, said Stavius. This is personal. You have no idea, human, growled the voice. You're Bruno the Dragon, exclaimed Stavius with a sudden realization. You've been their prisoner for years, and you are pissed.
Do not call me Bruno. My name is Safe,
roared the voice as a cloud of smoke blasted out of the dragon's cave. Stavius jumped back in fear and saw that Larsa had as well. Several other people had seen the smoke and were running toward the aviary with hopes of a rare glimpse of Bruno, their beloved dragon. Safe spoke in Stavius's mind after a few minutes. My apologies, little one. You are correct that I have over 100 years of reasons to want to destroy these families. I care little about your prophecy, but I will help you destroy these families and their talismans in whatever ways I can. You have an opportunity, but there is little time to prepare. Return later tonight with your friend and without your admirer, so we can discuss my plan.
So you have a plan, huh? And now you're suggesting that I should blindly trust a dragon I've never even seen? Thought Stavius.
That's awfully convenient. Another snort and cloud of smoke erupted from the cave. You are learning, young one, laughed the dragon. I have been doing little else than planning how to destroy these people for 100 years. Come tonight, and I will show myself, but you are correct. You must choose whether or not to trust me with very little time or information. Now leave me, and don't return before nightfall. Stavius turned to walk away, as even more people were elbowing their way up front for a chance to glimpse the dragon, despite the drizzle becoming a steady rain. He saw Larsa staring at him from the edge of the crowd, but didn't indicate that he saw her as he left the park.
He should have been planning how to lose her, but was contemplating the recent changes in his world instead.
Just today he had narrowly escaped a vampire, met 5 kids his own age who were scheduled to be executed in 2 days, had a telepathic conversation with a dragon, and yet he seemed to be taking it all in stride. He was lost in these thoughts as he stepped off the curb to cross the street.